Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car calls at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Maybe your check engine light's on. Maybe there's a little rattle. Maybe you're just getting a little bit concerned about your old heap. Yep, I'm talking about your car. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. We'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on our program for his monthly appearance today and answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in this industry for a long time, and he's pretty good with your questions. So call now. 800-348-2551 if something's puzzling you with your wheels. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org for the emails. And 800-348-2551 for your telephone calls. And we'll get into those very shortly. Gordon Fricke, welcome back. How are you, buddy?
Thank you, Ray. I'm great. How about you?
It's been a lovely weekend of snow removal and ice removal, and the driving is it's not that good right now.
This is a real winter that we haven't seen in quite some time.
Yep, it does feel that way.
Cold, windy, drifting snow, the whole deal.
Slippery driving conditions. Every time I slipped on the ice when I was snowblowing my driveway and my neighbors and everything else, I thought about those weird trucks that they keep advertising now that have the wheels that spin.
Oh, the crab walk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is that? Okay, again, I know we've talked about it, but again, how does it help? You're only allowed to drive them this way at low speeds. What is it supposed to do for you?
So what they do, and I'm not sure, I haven't studied the system on the Hummer EV and the GMC.
Right.
But that four-wheel steering, like we spoke about previously, has been around a while. It came and went. It didn't really get much traction. But in addition to the vehicle crab walking, like the commercials are showing, and I don't know if GM, if Hummer and GMC do this, but when they're on the highway, they're not turning in the same direction anymore. The front wheels, let's say, are turning right, and the left wheels are turning, the rear wheels are turning slightly left to help you corner, get you through corners at better speeds and stability. That was the premise back in the early days.
But these are trucks, and are you going to drive them fast enough to notice a difference when you're cornering a turn?
Are you thinking gimmick?
Listen, far be it for me to get sued by GMC. So, no, I'm not thinking gimmick, but what's the point?
So are they too big and too fat that they need all four wheels to steer now to get parked? Because they're big.
Your Honor, you're leading the witness. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. It's cars, 800-348-2551. A couple emails here, and then we'll get to it on the phones. This is from Bill in Clifton Park, who emailed very early this morning. Vehicle is a 2001 Volvo C70, 2.4L turbocharged, 107,000 miles. Last fall, a car threw our favorite, the P1133 code, check engine light. I replaced the upstream O2 sensor, bank one, tried clearing the codes, but the same code came back along with an additional one indicating a problem with the mass airflow sensor. Replaced the mass airflow sensor, the codes cleared, did not recur after restarting. About 2,500, 3,000 miles later, the code is popping up again. and the check engine light. After clearing, it comes back after several engine cycles. It was an aftermarket O2 sensor, but I can't believe it would go after only a few thousand miles. Is there something else that could be contributing to this error code? When I removed the original sensor, it was pretty clean. Did not indicate accumulation of oil or other contaminants. And that's from Bill in Clifton Park.
Yeah. So some vehicles are sensitive to the brand of sensor that gets replaced. Oxygen sensor in this car's case. If you get some really no-name, internet-sourced, don't know where it came from components, could have a bad O2 sensor. And that could be that plain and simple. There were some Chrysler products, Dodge, Chrysler, Jeep, that if you didn't use the Mopar sensor, a lot of times they just did not cooperate with aftermarket. So I'd be very suspicious as to the brand of sensor that got replaced. I'm not saying you necessarily have to go buy something from the Volvo dealer, but you want something that was considered original equipment, like a Bosch, which is probably what the car came with. NGK makes a fantastic sensor. They're an OE supplier as well. I'd be really suspicious as to what brand is in there before I chased it and went down a rabbit hole doing everything.
That's so interesting. I mean, I went through this with my Nissan Pathfinder, and I replaced it. I bought one online. No idea what the brand was.
Right.
But, I mean, I had 2 years of those sensors popping up and the check engine light going on, and it was always the O2 sensor. I take it out. I bought some cleaner, put it in. It would be fine for a little while, and then
yes,
same thing.
Mass airflow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Nick writes in, I saw a uniquely nifty car, and my friend actually knew what it was, an Isuzu Vihacross. Turns out there were only 6,000 made, maybe because it was a small crossover style with a V6 3.5-liter engine. Have you ever driven or worked on one of these? It looked fun, but trouble to deal with.
Really cool vehicle. I remember seeing those quite some time ago. I don't know what years they were made, probably in the 2000s.
Mm.
And I thought they were really neat looking vehicles. I saw a few of them go through the car auction, and I said, man, that'd be an interesting vehicle, but very low numbers. I don't know if they were good, but great concept.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Well, we have time for another email or two before we start loading up on the phones. Christopher is venting. Christopher says, just venting. Help. I purchased a 2021 Mazda 6 in June. Thought it'd be better on gas than it is. My wife's Kia Sorento gets better gas mileage than this car was, and I was just wondering, is there anything that I can do to get better?
Yeah. We get that question a lot.
Yes, we do.
And we get it a lot when gas prices go up, which they're really not too bad right now.
Well, it depends on if you're taking premium or not.
Yeah, well, that's right.
They're still well over four, at least in New York.
So it boils down to just a handful of things because the computer is in charge of the fuel mixture. Mm. So it is tweaking constantly as you're driving to achieve the best fuel-air ratio, which is going to give you the best economy. But there's a lot of things that influence that. Drag, tires, tire pressure, the type of tire. If you have winter tires on, they push harder.
Alignment.
Alignment is major because if you're towed in or towed out primarily, the resistance to move that car is much greater than people think.
Yeah.
And if it's wearing tires poorly, that's a good indicator of an alignment problem. But sometimes the alignment is out and you don't even notice it, or the tires are even looking halfway decent. Air filter. The engine needs to breathe as easy as it can. So that's quick and easy on most cars. Spark plugs. How old are they? Who knows? But they affect how the combustion gets lit,
mm-hmm.
gets lit up and how it burns. And deposits are a big, big issue today. Fuel deposits accumulating on the injectors. And depending on your injection system, on the intake valves, that's a biggie, and on the piston tops and everywhere else. So a good fuel system cleaner in the gasoline is highly beneficial.
Now, we see ads, and we've seen them at the gas pumps, you know, there are detergent gasolines.
Yep.
And I assume there are plenty of these, and they're very good. In the old days, before there were as many fuel injection systems as there are now, Was this less of a problem?
Yes, it was, because the tendency for these deposits to build was not as great because of the design. Fuel injection started out, and still in a lot of vehicles, sprays the fuel right in front of the intake valve. So the valve's getting hammered with gasoline. If the gasoline is bad and has very poor detergents and cleaners and deposit inhibitors, it cakes up on the valves very fast. Top tier gas today, which we've talked about, are all your top brands, like
yep.
The big brands, Mobil, Chevron, Citgo, Shell. Did I already say that? But
no.
All the good biggies have higher levels of cleaners. And then if you go to Shell, they've got this Nitro, which of course is 92 or 3. I think it's 93. Maximum cleaners, really good stuff, most expensive gas at the station.
I saw that Nitro. I think I was in Maine last summer and I saw a station that had that, but I don't see it very often around here.
I do see it at various, it is a Shell slogan or name, but I recommend a high-quality cleaner in your gas tank. Do it every oil change or once in between every oil change and then once in between.
But not every week.
No, you don't want to overdo it. You can overdose them, and then it gets into the oil and creates other problems.
You know, my caddy's throwing a sensor, and I thought it was initially the gas cap, and it might still be. I got a gas cap that's kind of not that good.
Yeah.
But if it's the catalytic converter, explain to me how the cleaning fluid works and whether it works. In other words, you put it in the gas tank, right?
Yep.
And then you have to drive it. You put it in a half-full tank and then drive it and then fill it up.
Well, there's a couple of products out there. One is made to help clean catalytic converters and sensors and specifically to get your check engine light off.
Yep.
If you've got a PO420 or a PO430, which are catalytic converter efficiency codes.
Yeah.
Make a long story short, it goes into the gasoline. They recommend you put the full bottle in at a quarter of a tank, drive it 10, 15 miles so you get a super high concentration, then go fill it, run that tank to empty so you get the whole tank full of cleaners. And if the deposits are covering up the honeycomb of the catalytic converter, which covers up the metals, the rare metals that create the catalyst that catalyze the fuel, if they get uncovered by deposits, your converter starts to work again, and you're good, and your light goes off.
Interesting.
That's the idea, and it does work in some cases.
But, again, I assume this is something that you have to use very sparingly.
The catacleaner stuff can also be used as often as every oil change.
Okay.
It's pretty expensive, and you don't really need to use it that often, but got to read the label, not overdo it.
It's cheaper than a catalytic converter, though.
If it works, yes.
All right, let's take a break. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Time to get to your calls. We'll check the email bag again in a little bit. We'll be back. Quincy Jones, Boogie Stop Shuffle here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Gordon Fricke time here. We'll get automotive maintenance and repair questions, and let's do that. Let's go to Mayfield, and we begin with Tom. Tom, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a 2016 Hyundai Elantra, 370,000 miles. Has pretty much just needed oil changes, tires, and brakes, and some plugs and coil packs. Yesterday, I started getting a flickering oil light. There's no engine codes. Nothing comes up when you stop at a box store and run a scan. There's no engine light on. What could that be, and how quickly does it need to be fixed?
Yeah, that's incredible mileage that you've achieved with that car. What is
yes.
the year again?
2016.
Wow, that's phenomenal. So The first, what needs to happen is an oil pressure test should be conducted. That's pretty easy. And what the shop does is they will install a gauge, and usually it can go in a couple of different places. If it's a spin-on oil filter, there's an attachment that will take the place of the oil filter, and you have a gauge that's now connected to it, a manual gauge. And you start the engine, and you watch the gauge. You let it reach operating temperature, and then let it idle, and then hit, and then reach a couple of different RPM levels to see where the pressure is. And if it's all within specs, the most likely cause is the switch or the sensor or sending unit is not sending the right signal anymore. And it's a very simple, easy repair. If the engine is healthy and your oil pressure is truly okay, it's more than likely that sending unit. But at that mileage, the shop definitely would want to conduct a oil pressure test to get a good idea what's going on.
And
there,
if the pressure is not good, then is that engine shot?
At this stage of the car's life, at that mileage, it would be too expensive to go in there, because a lot of people say, well, it just needs an oil pump. Well, not necessarily, because the oil pump can only do so much. It depends on what's happening downstream. If there are worn bearings or issues down the path of the lubrication system that affects the pressure, you could put 10 pumps on it in a row and it wouldn't change anything. So you got to be really careful. That can be a rabbit hole, you know, chasing oil pressure.
Yeah, at 370,000 miles, my guess was to hope that it was just a sensor and not going to be an issue.
Wow.
I'm going to trade it in anyway, or get rid of it. So, you know,
okay.
Yeah,
I was not going to go down.
Yeah, that's a quick
that's
a quick and easy thing to have checked, and they'll confirm it very quickly for you.
Tom, thanks for the call. 370,000 miles,
it's incredible,
to the moon and halfway back.
That's great mileage, and I didn't want to say too much, but the Hyundai had some serious timing chain issues, but I think it might have been slightly before his year car, because the timing chains would never last that long previously. Yeah.
Well, you know, he's going to trade it in, he said, but I mean, what are you going to get? 370,000 miles, get a Camel?
I would say he's done so well with that car that if he got $100, it'd be good, right?
Yeah, right. Okay, well, anyway, that's very impressive. Let's go to Sharon Springs. The number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Paul is in Sharon Springs. Paul, you're up.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I wish Gordon could be on once a week, but that would be impossible.
Yeah, I couldn't afford that.
I know. Oh. my question, you started off with gasoline, and that's my question. Every once in a while you hear on the radio, I guess a lady's name, Trudy Lumberg, who gives the national price for regular unleaded, blah-de-blah, blah-de-blah.
Okay.
You go to a gas station, the pumps, regular unleaded so much, mid-grade unleaded so much, premium unleaded so much. Lead was taken out of gas in the 1980s. Why do they still keep saying unleaded?
It's a really
genius.
It's a really good question. I think it's just become part of the nomenclature or lingo. Yeah, you're right, 100%. The what is different now in a lot of stations is ethanol free. You can buy ethanol free at various gas stations
at a premium. And what does that do? What is the advantage of that?
So the methyl alcohol is plant derived, and it's mixed in most stations at 10%. And the idea was to use less oil, use less fossil fuel for the United States. They're basically diluting the gasoline with alcohol. The premise was, we've got massive corn farms all over the countryside, in the middle of the country. We're producing giant amounts of corn. We'll turn that into alcohol. I don't know how cost-effective it is or was, but the fuel did not do vehicles much good. The fuel systems didn't like it. They weren't capable of handling that alcohol, so you had issues early on. Now, all the car makers are adapted to handling the fuel. The alcohol-laden fuel is less efficient. You get poorer miles per gallon.
Right.
So some of the gas makers have offered some ethanol-free, and primarily for old vehicles, lawn and garden, small engines, things like that, that the alcohol really raises Cain with. But if you have an older vehicle, I'm talking fairly quite old, maybe even carbureted years.
Yeah,
that's all you want to put in that because the solvent ability of that alcohol is not good.
Okay, Paul, thanks a lot for the call. You brought up small engines and snow blowing the driveway. I ran out of gas. I had to go and get some. Put premium in because I heard you mention this about smaller engines and the ethanol.
Did you get ethanol free?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you have
I
to.
Did.
Yeah,
but why?
No, there's no alcohol in it. So,
but I mean, what exactly is? I've been putting ethanol in my lawn, you know, regular gas in my lawnmower for hundreds of years, and they work until I can no longer do anything.
Older machines, it devoured a lot of the seals, gaskets, and plastic components, so you'd end up with deterioration and failures way early because of the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
If your snowblower is fairly new,
yeah,
it may be manufactured with alcohol-proof components inside there.
Yeah, okay.
But the other thing is the ethanol has the ability to take on a lot of moisture because the alcohol gobbles it up.
Yep.
Kind of like mixing vodka and tonic. Or what do you mix? What do you like to have with vodka?
I don't generally drink vodka.
No?
No. And I won't mix bourbon with tonic.
How about bourbon and water?
Okay, fair
enough.
You know
how nicely they blend?
Yes.
So think of the ethanol gas as a bourbon, and you're adding water to it. It can handle a lot of it, but the engine hates it. It's too much moisture.
So if it was the end times, and the gas stations were all done, and I had some super 151 rum, and I had a case of it. Could I put that in my car and run it at the end of days?
I don't know if it would work in your car, but maybe a low compression engine. Maybe you could still do your lawn and your snow blowing with the rum.
Well, geez, if it's the end times, I'm not going to do my lawn. Let's go to Abigail in Kingston. Abigail, you're on.
I love you guys.
Hi, welcome.
I'm laughing here. Anyway, I don't have a question. I have a comment about what my late father, he was never late when he was alive, but what my late father taught me when he was teaching me to defensive drive. And he said, Ab, you got to know what's under the hood before you get on the road. And so I have saved lots of money because
wow.
I do know about what's under the hood. So, but thank you so much. This show is so fantastic. And Gordon, I wish you were next door so I could use you as my mechanic.
Well, thank you very much.
And Abigail,
bye.
If you know what's going on under the hood, can you come over and do my check engine light in my driveway? Come on over to the house.
Okay.
No. All right. Fix her a bourbon.
Thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's our friend Gordon Fricke today, automotive maintenance and repair. And to Chatham we go. It's Jerry's turn. Hello, Jerry.
Hey there. So I have a 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokee with a factory remote starter, but it doesn't work when it gets really cold like now. The internet said something about a battery issue, so, I mean, geez, what's going on?
So the it's a factory auto starter, is that what you said, factory remote starter system?
Yeah.
So you push the fob, and is it a two-time button on yours? You push it twice and it starts?
Yes.
Yeah. Good comment or good thought on the internet. Do you have another remote for that auto starter?
Yeah, I tried that, changing the battery and stuff.
Yeah. Did you try your second remote? Do you have a spare?
Yeah.
Does it act the same way on both?
Yep.
Okay. You're kind of ruling out, in a way, the fobs, because if you got two fobs with good batteries in them and the car acts the same way on both, there may be a problem internally with the way the system picks up the signal. Is it a distance issue, or doesn't it matter how close you get to the car? Will it still fail?
No, it doesn't really matter how close.
Yeah. And it's a 16, did you say?
15.
15, yeah. If it's a factory system, that can be, some data can be achieved by scanning that vehicle. It's got to go into a shop that has Jeep software, not just a generic code reader. And there could be some evidence or information in there that's saying what's happening there. But that it's too complicated other than what you have done and we just spoke about.
Well, on the internet, for what it's worth, they mentioned low voltage in a battery.
Well,
so I was thinking about going and having the battery checked to make sure it was up to snuff.
Well, how strong does it start ordinarily in cold weather? Like lately, does it spin right over great, or do you get the suspicion that it's not cranking properly?
Only once.
How old is the battery?
You know what? I don't know. I tried to find out. I thought I had the paper, but I don't know. And, and the battery is under the seat, so I haven't
Three to 5 years is kind of the lifespan in the Northeast. Now, we've got some vehicles that go, I've had vehicles 10 plus, which is rare. But do you think that could be the original battery?
No.
No, it's been replaced. Okay.
Yeah.
It would be wise to get it tested and get some results just to be sure the battery is up to par 100%.
Okay.
All right,
Sounds
Jerry.
Good.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Gordon Fricke who is here to answer your car questions. Tom in Endicott says, we have a 2016 Camaro. I've been changing gear oil in my Toyota differentials for 40 years or so. I use the Mobil 1 synthetic gear oil, but GM says you have to use the GM brand of gear oil for Camaro differentials. What's the story? Can I use Mobil 1 gear oil versus the Dextron gear oil that GM says I have to use? And that's from Tom in Endicott.
Yeah. So Chevrolet or GM doesn't manufacture or produce their own oils, but they do have specs.
Yeah.
If Mobil 1 has the specs for that Camaro, absolutely yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to find out. Mobil 1's website will tell you what gear oil goes into what vehicles.
Yeah.
It'd be that easy to confirm. And then the question will be, yes, you certainly can use it.
And also coolant. I remember some of my older caddies, they would say use Dextron.
Dexcool.
Yeah, Dexcool.
Yeah.
Why?
So
it was a different color. That's about all.
It was an orangey colored coolant. And it's part of the manufacturer making their product unique, so you got to buy their stuff. So the aftermarket very quickly jumped on board and said, here, we've got like Xerox or Prestone, whoever the big makers are. Here's your Dextron coolant. We've got it.
It's
the right color. Yeah. It's compatible. The problem with With that Dexcool in those years, a lot of people would say, oh, I need coolant, and all I got is the old green that I had for my other car, and I'm going to pour it in there. When the green mixed with the orange Dexcool, it made it look like the cooling system was rusty, like you had a serious rust problem.
Oh.
See, you never wanted to mix those, and you still don't.
So, but no problem. It just looked bad?
It didn't harm anything, but it looked so bad. And then flushing it out was terrible to get the color back.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. All right. This email from Stephanie. Then we'll take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. If you have a car question for Gordon Fricke, well, you're going to like this one. This is from Stephanie. Subject heading, thank you. Just wanted to say a big thank you to Gordon Fricke. I called in last time he was on the show at the end of the show about a clunking noise I'd hear in my 2015 Subaru when I went over bumps. It had already been in the garage twice, and the clunking was getting worse. He told me to have the front lower ball joints checked, and he was exactly right. Thank you for the great advice. Much appreciated. And that's from Stephanie.
Well, that's nice. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Ball joints. All right, Zach the engineer, let's take a break here. We'll go back to the phones and emails, et cetera, momentarily. Gordon Fricke's our guest. It's cars and trucks and small engines, whatever. We'll be back. From Idlewild South, there's the Allman Brothers in memory of Elizabeth Reed on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. I've had many a car where I've cranked Allman Brothers on a summer day driving around. That was living back in the old days.
We listened to a lot of that stuff in our prime. When I say prime, like
hundreds of years ago,
late teens, early 20s.
Yep.
And back then we rode around for recreation.
Yeah.
I don't think people ride around that much anymore.
No, we would be castigated roundly.
Yeah.
By several listeners if we said we did that. So we're not doing that. Okay. As far as you know.
Right.
Joe in Clifton Park writes, I have a 2915 Corvette. I think it's 2015. Otherwise he's definitely in the future. Joe says, I have a 2015 Corvette, standard transmission.
That's
on
nice.
A Corvette.
Yeah.
Nicely done. 23,000 miles. It's only driven in summer, no rain. Manufacturer says to change the transmission, hydraulic clutch fluid, and coolant at 5 years. Your recommendations are appreciated.
Well, so that's a good question, because that stuff, particularly the clutch fluid. And did he mention brake fluid in there? You don't have to go back.
I just deleted it.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Clutch fluid and brake fluid.
Hydraulic fluid.
Same material. Yeah. It's brake fluid. That stuff sits around and attracts moisture from the air. It's hygroscopic.
Hygro.
I believe a G.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And that means it's constantly looking for moisture. And even though there's caps and seals and all that stuff on these systems, it finds it. And then it goes in there and it deteriorates the cylinders, the clutch cylinders and the brake cylinders. So a car like that, I think it would be a good idea to definitely get those fluids changed, flushed out. Because let's say another couple of years pass, still low mileage, but now the clutch pedal all of a sudden is sinking halfway to the floor and you barely make it home and you're scared to death it's the clutch. Well, if one of those cylinders fail, particularly the one on the transmission, you got a massive labor job on your hands. And
yeah.
Then the shop's going to say, we've got your transmission out. The clutch looks really good, but we're into this thing for 17 hours. maybe we should do the clutch. So now you got a $5,000 job.
Yep.
That maybe you could have circumvented by changing the fluid.
Okay.
So that was a long-winded answer for yes.
Do it.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you what, though. I don't even know if they do this regularly anymore with the sports cars. But Corvette with a five or six on the floor, yeah.
That's a nice combination.
That's a
yeah.
good combo.
Yeah.
Now, the 2015, what engine are we talking about?
That probably had the, was it 2015? That might be a 5.7 still in those days, which was what we used to call a 350.
Yeah, 5.7
liters. 5.7
liters. Yeah.
Or maybe it was the 6.2. Some Chevy guy's going to kill me because it's a 6.2, I believe.
So that's about 400?
Or a 6 liter. Could be a 6 liter.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Either way, that'll go. And having a manual transmission
fun.
Makes it. Oh, yeah.
And it's also an anti-theft device. That manual transmission.
So few people can do it.
So few people can steal or drive a manual shift car today.
Yeah. Well, you know what? What got me once was the column shift. I had to drive back from a was in a band and we were playing a gig and the guitar player had a old van with a column shift and he had had a few and he said, you got to drive. And I said, I don't know how to do it. And man, I don't think that van ever came back from my driving back.
You could park a column shift car on any street you want all night and you could even put a note on and say, look, it just steal this thing. and they couldn't do it.
All right, let's go to Richmond, Massachusetts. Pam, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2016 GMC Acadia, and I've had a rattle underneath towards the front of the car, like under the motor, for quite some time. I took it to my mechanic, and they said everything looks great. They couldn't find anything. Then I needed a tire sensor fixed, so I went to a tire shop, and they said, no, I had them look as well. And they said, no, everything looks great except for maybe a couple rusted clips, which they took off. Then I went to a muffler shop thinking it was my muffler, and they said nothing was wrong, but they found a golf ball in the back of my car, and they thought it had been rolling around. But I still hear the rattle, and sometimes it seems associated with tire movement, like the bounces of a shock or I don't know. Do you have any suggestions?
Sure. Do you hear this when you go over certain bumps? Is that what brings this noise about?
Yes. I can say that that definitely happens. I live on dirt roads, so I hear it then, but I also sometimes it just sounds like a general rattle, like something has broken off, it's moving around, so I don't.
Yeah, this is what fools a lot of mechanics and shops, and we run into this a lot. And the components are called sway bar links,
yes,
and sway bar bushings, and your car has them both front and rear. They're a wear and tear item because every time the wheel moves, they move, and they're there to keep the vehicle stable, called a stabilizer bar or a sway bar, and when you raise most vehicles on lifts, the suspension hangs way down beyond its normal location, and a mechanic will grab those components and shake them and say, nope, these are all tight, but they're being artificially stretched out, and the wear is being covered up. So you need to check them on either a drive-on lift where the vehicle is sitting at its normal position on the road, and then grab those things and shake them. But my guess is you've probably got a sway bar link or sway bar bushing or a combination of the two occurring that's causing that rattle. And they're not dangerous necessarily to the point where you're going to lose a wheel or the ability to steer. But I've seen sway bar links break, and sometimes they can get into the tire. So maybe if you're going to get it checked again, just say, hey, guys, I'm not trying to tell you what to do here, but could you do a good job and check these sway bar links and bushings?
That's a good idea.
I heard about them somewhere.
All right, Pam.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number, by the way. Joe wrote back, the guy with the I don't know, seven on the floor, he says.
The Corvette.
6.2 liter, 460 horsepower.
6.2. Okay, good. Yeah, so that was the largest of my three possibilities.
Oh, that's a nice car.
Yeah, that's a nice car.
Yep. All right. Let's see. We'll do a couple emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Matt in Clifton Park. Subject heading, six-stroke engines. Please explain how the new six-stroke engines work.
Who is this?
That's Matthew, Matt in Clifton Park.
He's cutting edge.
Yeah.
That six-stroke concept is very, very fresh to the automotive world.
First of all, background. You see a four-stroke, two-stroke. What does the stroke mean? I mean, we know what it means on Medical Monday, but not today.
All right. You remember the old chainsaws? Pull a string and ring, 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 ring. That's a two-stroke. So it very ease quickly. Every time the piston goes up, it compresses the mixture, it sparks, and the piston goes down, and then it goes up and repeats it every single time. So it's a two-stroke system.
Yes.
Your Cadillac, even your Le Mans, and even your snowblower, that piston has to travel four times to get a power stroke. So that's called a four-stroke.
Okay.
Porsche has a whole bunch of patents and designs on a six-stroke, and what they're doing is, and it's very complicated, and I just learned about this recently and got very interested, and they've combined a two-stroke and a four-stroke to make a six-stroke, and they're getting more power strokes out of that engine per crankshaft revolution.
So what's the advantage?
More power pulses. So you're getting more power, less waste, less pumping losses, which is what engines do. The more cylinders you have, the harder it is to crank, to move that engine, because it's a giant air pump, basically. So the six-stroke is getting a lot more power out of a small power plant without the use of a turbocharger or a supercharger, in a nutshell.
So will it be a headache for Gordon Fricke to figure out how to fix these things?
If it goes into production, it's going to be in Porsches.
Right.
Will it hit the mainstream? If it's a good concept, it probably will. It complicates the engine more. There's more moving parts and more things turning and more gears and all that. But engines are so complicated now. but the design and engineering is so good that maybe it won't be, maybe the offset won't be a problem at all.
Hmm. You know, fun fact, back in the 80s when I was starting out in radio, I had a Hyundai with a one stroke. Did you know that?
What'd you do? Put an oar out and paddle it?
It was a Fred Flintstone edition, right. Actually. It was very nice. Yeah, Ken in Rosendale. Ken, you're on.
Yeah, two things. One, I had a 70 Nova with three on the tree, straight six. Best car I ever had.
Oh, nice. Yeah, buddy.
But, Gordon, I'm calling because I have a 2007 Express van, not a lot of miles on it, and when I stop it, and get out, I smell antifreeze.
Mm.
And I checked my oil, and I didn't see any milkiness that sometimes happens with a blown head gasket. Any thoughts?
So are you dripping or adding, or just the smell is starting?
I am adding, but I've never seen any liquid underneath it.
And how often do you add?
That's a good question. Maybe once a month or something like that.
Okay, yeah, that's a really slow event. Here's what's happening. You've got something seeping or oozing, and it's probably kind of high up on the engine. So it's evaporating, not dripping, never making it to the ground, or you're never seeing it. And the smell is the coolant, which has a sweet, kind of a strange odor. It's very... once you've smelled hot coolant, you know what it is.
Sounds expensive, always.
It
smells expensive.
So coolant pressure test, shop would pump up the system up to operating temperature and then look everywhere for leaks, see if you can find anything. In a case like yours, there probably will be a stain because it's been evaporating and it's going to leave the deposits of the coolant behind. Deck's cool, it's going to leave orange residue. Old school, it's going to leave green residue. So you're going to see the color of the coolant somewhere staining. If it's that elusive and you can't, or the shop can't see or find it, that would be a time to maybe put a very, very mild a conditioner or sealer in there. If it's just a minute seep somewhere, you know, a tiny, I shouldn't even call it a crack, but it's, you know, something that's allowing.
You think it'll work?
It does. This stuff can work, but you need to rule out the fact that you don't find a leak first.
Right.
But that's what's happening.
Excellent. Can I ask you a follow-up question?
Sure.
Or actually different. I have a 2016 GMC Sierra pickup truck. One of my bolts on my exhaust manifold broke, so it has a ticking noise. It sounds like a lifter.
Yep.
Am I at risk of scarring my lifter if I don't have it fixed right away?
You mean if it's an exhaust manifold leak, are you concerned of damaging something?
Yes.
Not really. I mean, it's not the best thing to have happen, but boy, there's a lot of old V8s out there that are Ford mainly was a big exhaust manifold leaker or cracker, some Dodges and Chevys too. So not really, because the repair is insane. Sometimes it kills the vehicle.
Well, 2007, he's on... life support as it is, right?
Well, it's 2017, and I love it.
Oh,
17.
Oh, that's much different. All right, Ken, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Amanda writes in, I drive a 1994 Volvo 940 wagon, 289,000 miles. My question is this normal? I've been starting my car in the morning. I let it warm up before driving into work, and I've noticed that I can smell car exhaust inside my car as I'm getting into my car. Seems like it should not be like this.
Yeah, so she didn't comment that she's hearing any exhaust
noise.
She didn't
say that, no.
But you can start to get a leak and never hear it. If she's smelling it in the car, it might be good to get it checked out. Get it to a shop on a lift and explain what they're looking for. And you generally, a car that age, there's got to be something that's starting to go that's not quite audible yet to her. So, yeah, she should check it out because it's not good to have raw exhaust.
All right, number here is 800-348-2551. I'll tell you what, Jem in Woodstock lost connection. She was on hold for quite a while. I'm just going to go right to the call. Jem, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I got disconnected.
Yep, go ahead. You're on.
Oh, I'm back.
Yeah.
Hallelujah. okay, so I have a 2010 Dodge Caravan, Grand Caravan, and
all of a sudden, in the past like 9 months, it started stalling out every time I slowed down or went to brake. So if I'm accelerating at all, it's fine. But if I let my foot up off the accelerator, it would stall. And sometimes, usually I was going slow, but it has happened at 40 miles an hour. And then the car went off and I lost all power steering and I had to like try to get to the side of the road. And then I turned the car off and restart it and it would be fine until I drove again.
Fuel pump?
Will it restart instantly or does it give you some trouble?
Yes, instantly. Instantly. It restarts instantly. So I took it to the dealership, a Dodge dealership, and they had it twice for like 4 days and they could not figure it out. I did go to like a AutoZone place, a box place, and this guy mechanic happened to walk in at the same time that I was explaining it to the guy at the desk. And he goes, oh yeah, that's your valve control. But the dealership didn't want to change that because they said, that's not what it might be. So why do you want to spend the money? But I, meanwhile, now I can't drive my car anymore.
Oh, boy.
Oh, and then while it was sitting, the brakes went on. And I just had the brakes done. Now the brakes are just sinking to the ground.
Oh, Jim. That's bad. All right, Garden.
Yeah. I know, right?
Well, the sinking brake could be a rusty line somewhere. That's not going to be any fun there on a 2010 vehicle. The stalling, I was ready for an answer until you said it happened at speed with your foot on the gas at 40 miles an hour?
No.
Off the gas?
No. When, yeah.
Coasting down?
Correct.
So when you coast down and come to a stop, the engine's off most of the time?
No, because I always give it a little gas.
Yeah.
I mean, yes.
Right. Okay.
That's what would happen if I didn't compensate for it. Yeah. Right.
A pretty common condition is the throttle body, the throttle plate or throttle unit gets deposits on it, especially a vehicle that age, and I'm assuming you got some miles on it.
It's only got 108,000.
Yeah, that's not bad for that age. So my first and quick and easy thing to do would be to do a throttle body cleaning. Which on that vehicle, I don't think it's hard to get to. Some vehicles, they're insane to reach. This one I don't think is bad. It just confirmed that the throttle plate is clean, free. You just go in there with some solvent, a spray solvent, and maybe a rag, and you clean that up. Give it some stuff in the gas tank at the same time, Tecron or a very good injection cleaner. But other things come into play. Mass airflow sensor, is it dirty? Is the check engine light on?
No.
Other things,
light. Yeah.
Yeah, state of tune of the other stuff plays a factor in it. But throttle body cleaning, I would be first to check.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot, and thanks for getting back to us. All right, this is a long email. This is from Fred, who sent this question in yesterday and hasn't heard it. So I'm going to try to read this, and then you can answer it quickly, hopefully. It's long. Hey, Fred, ease up on the pros. Our 2012 Prius has blind spots that make it tricky to know exactly when other cars in other lanes are overtaking us. We agree on that. My feeling is I can get a better reference by seeing a tiny sliver of the rear fenders mostly when I turn my head a little bit. The car still has blind spots about a half car length back, but that is because the car has built-in blind spots. It's still tricky in multi-lane highways to know where other cars are, especially as they creep forward. I accept that I need to double-check where those other cars are, and I use the side windows also. My wife knows I'm wrong and refers to an authority figure like New York State Troopers. Apparently, they swing out the side view mirrors a bit more, so if I were to turn my head, I would not see any fender. My feeling is that by not having the fender to refer to, I'm not sure how many lanes over a car is in my blind spot. It's like a floating image of a car in my mirror. We always have to tweak the side mirrors after the other spouse messes with it when they drive the car. If I feel safer, am I still wrong? My wife's way is unsettling to me. Our peripheral vision is also hampered by using corrective lenses on top of that. We both know that anyway from a lifetime of nearsightedness, we never have accidents. We otherwise have a very solid relationship. Gordon, you may be the Dear Abby of car conundrums, and that's from Freddie and Susie.
Can you repeat that whole thing?
Oh, for God's sake, I retire.
Mirrors may be the issue here. They may be inadequate for his particular case.
Right.
Japan always had mirrors on the front fenders. Do you remember seeing those Japanese cars?
Yeah, the old days, yeah.
And I think they offered the driver way better view, but I don't know if you can get Japanese fender-mounted mirrors for that car.
Okay, well, listen, I think the thing to say here is that, Fred, I'm very sorry, but your wife is 100% right. Whatever she said, and I forget now, it was about 9 paragraphs.
Okay, I'm going to agree with Fred's wife.
The wife is always right, Fred. Just give it up, man. Gordon Fricke, we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Yes, you too.
Support comes from Glen Eddy Senior Living and the Terrace at Glen Eddy Assisted Living off Consul Road in Niskayuna, a community of seniors who share similar interests and passions, part of Eddy Senior Living. Eddie, E-D-D-Y, seniorliving.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks for listening and tremendous call. Sorry we didn't get to yours or your emails. He'll be back next month. Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Tomorrow it's Home Improvement with Darren Tracy. Grab a hammer, grab a hoe, and we'll see you tomorrow. Here we go.